William Gass, welcome to the National Humanities Center. Let's talk about love and philosophy. What do the philosophers have to teach us about love in the modern world?
Well, I think it's a change that philosophers are even interested in the subject. It, of course, is a very ancient interest and dates at least as early as Plato. You do have philosophers talking about it intermittently throughout the centuries, Spinoza in particular. But by and large, in the last 150 years, the subject of love has really not occupied philosophical attention much at all.
Why is that? Too tricky? Too emotional?
Too emotional. Philosophers were concerned much more with scientific ideas and problems. The rise of a kind of positivist mentality among philosophers in particular. And then when that changed after the Second World War, there was a strong resurgence, say, of existentialism and so on. The world seemed a world in which the chief problems were not love, but hate, alienation, estrangement, and so forth. In my own examination of it in this conference, much of my paper will be skeptical.
Do you not believe in love, Bill Gass?
Oh, it's not a matter of that. It's that love is complicated, and people tend to think about it as a word that just simply signifies something positive. And to me, it signifies something as it's usually used, that is both positive and negative.
Well, help me to understand some of these possibilities. What do you mean, for example, the negative implications of love? Jealousy? Is that what we're after?
No, most romantic love is possessive. The very expression, "I want you." Will you be mine? You know.
Right.
Once upon a time, not too long ago, "will you be mine" was not looked at very seriously. I mean, you let the words pass, but feminists won't. The conception of romantic love, which in the tradition was very male-oriented.
I remember one of my professors in college making a remark, I think only half jokingly, that romantic love was the principal invention of the devil. How would a philosopher react to that in terms of this possessiveness stuff or metaphysical issues? What?
Well, I think one of the ways would be to examine what ethical conditions are involved in romantic love. For example, one of the things about romantic love has been traditionally that it was an excuse. It was an excuse for abandoning your wife or your family. It was an excuse of abandoning all kinds of ordinary social requirements. It permitted you, that is, it was used as an excuse for excesses of all kinds.
What's the other side of romantic love? If the philosophers will, if you, Bill Gass, are skeptical about that dimension of love, romantic love, what alternative do you propose? Is that what you're after in this?
Yes. The question has always been between the rational side. Plato, for example, who's an ideal instance of this, said that you should love what is good. Well, then you first find out what's good. And you do this in a very rational, almost scientific fashion, and then you love it. That has nothing to do with romantic love, of course, which you fall in love, you are completely overwhelmed, and in this illusion, you call things good. There's always a struggle between what will rule, as Plato says. The epistemology of romantic love is that love is an illusion. That it's a belief that in the value of another person, vis-a-vis yourself,
right.
Which is generally overestimated, fragile, mistaken, and so on, and in short time, you know, dissolves.
That's a pretty grim view of human nature and human relationships, isn't it? You're telling me, Bill Gass, mm-hmm. that love practically of any sort is a sort of, as you said, an illusion, a consolation.
Romantic love.
We're hedging against really looking over the abyss of our own natures.
Yeah.
Take it that far?
But romantic love is a bourgeois invention, comes uh-huh. up in the 18th, 19th centuries.
Oh, now, maybe. Come on. Let's not complicate things by telling me that love is political, necessarily. Isn't it intensely individual?
No,
is it? Is it,
no.
in fact?
No, I think that's one of the things that I'm going to mention in my paper, that we often think it's highly individual and that it's always been around in this form.
Uh-huh.
It's highly culturated. The way in which people express things which we want to call love vary in society to society, time to time. Romantic love is, I think, a relatively, in its sort of dominance, relatively late notion. It is associated with laying claims to uh-huh. Emotion over and personal value over the state. For instance, in China, which I recently visited, a woman writer there was in intense trouble with the authorities because she had just written a story which recommended that people marry for love
mm-hmm.
rather than political ideology, similarity of interests, and so on, that the heart should lead. Well, this was shocking, and so on. So it's by no means, you know, the usual thing.
Right.
Arranged marriages, that sort of thing.
Which we have gotten away from, in the past couple of hundred years or
yes.
so?
Yes, yeah.
Now, again, I don't mean to trivialize the philosophical inquiry mm-hmm. into the nature of love, Bill Gass, but as we look about us in American society today, it's practically unavoidable. You go into a bookstore or a coffee shop or a drugstore, and the places are full of these self-help books
yeah.
about love. How would you characterize them as they look into the nature of love? Is that worthy of a professional philosopher's attention?
Well, it's worthy of attention as a phenomenon, as the kind of continuous cultural trashing of the emotions.
oh,
but it's junk, you know. I mean, what you have to do is to notice how much of it there is and how it functions.
Uh-huh.
But the word itself in our society is totally bankrupt, totally corrupted.
The word love.
Yeah, it's used every time you turn around in the most ridiculous ways, reduced to little red hearts on bumper stickers, you
right.
know. And it's sometimes I love the Big Apple, and uh-huh. sometimes it's I love my Doberman Pinscher.
Okay,
you know?
Well, now let me be contentious with you. What's wrong with that? What would a philosopher replace that kind of expression with? Are we talking about mm-hmm. What subtle linguistic exercises as we attempt
well,
to
Well, no,
understand
I think in fact most philosophers wouldn't bother with it at all, and that's why. I think it's an interesting phenomenon that this concept is now being examined more critically and thoroughly than it has in some time,
mm-hmm.
From lots of different points of view. But I think feminists have had a great deal to do with that.
Mm-hmm. Let's conclude our conversation, William Gass. How would you say, at both a sort of a special level, that is to say, the nature of professional philosophy, and then at a more popular level, let me come back to that first mm-hmm. question. What do the philosophers today have to teach us about love, loving ourselves, loving mm-hmm. other people? Is there a way to summarize
I don't think that? I don't think that's what philosophers do. I think they would teach us, if anything, how to think about it.
Uh-huh. Methods.
To approach the problem.
Uh-huh.
Not so much solutions, but begin to think in certain disciplined ways about a subject which is as generally woolly in its study as it is in itself. You know, so what you have to do almost essentially is to get detached and tough about that subject, because it is itself so tender and malleable.
William Gass teaches at Washington University. He participated in a recent conference at the National Humanities Center on love, marriage, gender, and sexuality. Books by William Gass include Fiction and the Figures of Life and Habitations of the Word. The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center.